So we did the pledge and introductions, and then we're...
Okay, do we have a motion to approve the minutes for December 11th meeting?
I'm moving for discussion, but I just want to say that I think you're the only one...
That was here?
That was here, so I normally abstain, but they won't ever get approved because we don't have a quorum of people who were here.
Right.
So for the purpose, this one time, for the purposes of getting approval, I'll move them and I will vote to approve them. But I just wanted to be noted that I wasn't here, and until I listened to the meeting, I couldn't even speak to the veracity of it.
Yeah.
But
we'll never get
them approved without actually doing that.
Because we're the only two that were on the committee before.
Who we
correct.
Anyway, right? Yeah.
Mana.
Oh, is she not coming?
No, I believe she is coming.
Oh, good.
She's probably just running.
We need to talk about the time. Yeah.
Just technically, by Robert's rules, you don't have to have been at the meeting to approve.
You don't have to legally, no. But
just technically.
Okay, so.
But I know.
But I don't like to do that. Yeah.
So do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye. So a lot of discussion.
Okay.
For the
audience. So any? Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So the minutes have been approved.
I'm around.
And let me just.
So I don't know if you want to hear them speak since they're here. Ken was going to be here, but he's completely
And I thanked him for not coming.
Yes,
he is coming down with something.
It's
so
terrible.
The flu type stuff.
He thinks he brought something home from NICE.
Oh.
Nice.
Oh, dear. So, Tim, do you have anything you want to share with us before we go over the resolution? Or?
Sure, just a couple of things. I'll give you two things, actually. The Gus concept feasibility, that's being changed right now as we speak. I was on the phone this morning. For those of you who don't know what that is, I should probably explain what that is. Right now, the agency retained the services of an environmental company, engineering firm, to conduct a feasibility study to combine Great Ulster and Sullivan counties under one authority, see if that makes sense. So they're looking at road traffic, and they're looking at highways, looked at distance of transfer stations and all that. So they came up with a draft. There were a lot of comments on the draft. There were some financial issues. When I say issues, I mean that there were some... finances they had to go back and redo again. There were some facilities that they had to go back and look at again that were not totally accurate. That happens with any time you have a first draft and you get it out. So they're making those revisions now, and they should have them. I just talked to the engineer this morning on the phone, and he's heading off to the Super Bowl. But
maybe you paid him too much.
His son works for the Eagles.
Oh, okay.
So nice. But he got free tickets. So, but he said over the next week and over the next couple of weeks, we're going to make some changes and try to develop a final. So the concept is this. They're going to be doing their formal presentation to all three counties in March. So I reached out to the three chairmen of the three counties, asking who I should be working with to get that scheduled. I don't know how they play out as far as dates when the three counties all meet. I know you guys are second Tuesday, right?
Second and first. I mean, second and third Tuesdays, yeah.
Yeah.
So it could be on,
no, but it could hit the second or it could hit the third.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but you'd want it probably to be on the caucus day, not
yeah.
the session day.
I talked to Ken about it. He'd like to try to do it on the caucus day.
Oh, okay. You just let me know whatever the date and time is so I can let Cornerstone know.
That's the 13th.
I haven't heard anything from Sullivan or Greenback, but I just got the email this morning. So they're going to do the formal presentation sometime in March, remember to lay that out. And then we'll see how the counties all feel about it. And if they all want to stay in, if one wants to drop out, I don't know. That'll be up to you guys. But so that's where we are with Gus, or Guswa, Green Ulster, Sullivan, Salt Waste Authority. The other thing I want to mention, too, is Single Stream, just so you're aware of it. It's the worst it's ever been, and we knew this was coming because of the China's National Sword Initiative, which was...
worst it's ever been in what? The value of the commodity?
Yeah, right.
About halfway through last year, China announced that they were going to have a new initiative called the National Sword. Back in 2013, they had the Green Fence. The National Sword is there. They're being very selective of what recycling they take. So it's backing up the recycling markets nationwide. And just to give you a comparison, I've seen the single stream. We're not a single stream plant. We're a dual stream plant, so I can't process it. So all we are a pass-through. You know, we get the the recycling trucks come in, they dump the single stream. We load it on long-haul trucks and send it to a single-stream facility. I've seen it as high in the 8 years I've been there. They're paying us $12 to $15 a ton. Over the past couple of years, it's been around zero. So they're still hauling it for free, but they're not paying us. We're not paying them. Just to give you an example, went from zero in December to now in January, we're paying $39 a ton to get rid of it. So we lost $24,000 in January. In February, prices went up to $59 a ton we have to pay to get rid of it. What's ironic about that, we only pay $54 a ton to get rid of trash. So it costs more money now to get rid of recycling than it does to send trash to the landfill. So this is happening nationwide. It's bigger than all of us at this point. So I did receive a phone call today from Congressman Fassel's office in Washington, D.C., through a board member had contacted his office, asked him to contact us. So I talked to them for a little while on the phone, explained it to them. They are aware this is happening all over the nation. I've heard it from my peers, like I said, probably beginning of last summer when they started talking about it. So it's not good. We charge, just so you know, we charge $20 a ton. So in January, we charged $20 a ton. We were being charged $39 a ton to take it away. So we were losing $19 a ton, not including employee time, fuel costs, loading it, and all that. Now we're down to $39 a ton we're losing for every ton we export out. So at some point, we may have to raise the rates.
That was my first question. You have the authority to raise the rates at any time, correct?
Any time. So all I need is board approval.
Is the board discussing that, or has the board begun discussing that?
We
talk about the agency without flow control of recyclables being the place of last resort when it's cheaper for a hauler to dump it on the agency, they do that. You know, if they were making more money by selling it, they probably wouldn't be bringing it to us as a pass-through agency anyway.
That's true with the large haulers. There's some small haulers that don't have any
electricity. They just don't have, right.
But the large haulers like Waste Management and County Waste, they have their own MRFs to feed. Just so you know, too, like last year, at the beginning of last year, we used to send it up to the Port of Albany, and they pretty much told us we don't want anymore. Don't even give it to us. We know what's going to happen with the markets. We're not accepting it. That's a nuclear situation. I just hope that where we're sending it now, the closest one is in Beacon. There is a facility in New Jersey that will take some of it for us, but we have to have several trucks a day, which they're not interested in that much. They might send us one every couple days. You know, I can't operate that way because it'll be coming out the doors with it by the afternoon.
Right. So, I have another question which follows on that. Then that's what's happening with the dual stream that you're getting from the municipalities? Are you still making money or breaking even on that?
Dual stream is still working. And you know, I do know that there's municipalities around the entire United States that are switching back to dual stream for that reason. Single stream's been a disaster. It's been an absolute disaster. And I don't know how much you guys know about this, but you know what happens with it is what's happening in China. One of the things, the reason they're being very selective, they're only allowing 1% contamination. And what happens is the glass jars break into the paper gets ground into it, goes to the paper mill is rejected, ends up in the landfills anyway. I was at a conference in November where they had a gentleman on from Oregon that worked for the state of Oregon and for their environmental protection or whatever they are out there. And we were talking about single stream, and he said parts of the state do have single stream, especially the larger cities like Portland. But he said much of the state never switched over because they have such large paper mills out there that they found when they started to go to single stream that the paper mills just kept rejecting it because it was damaging all their equipment. Mm-hmm. So they never switched over a lot of it. But they were talking about even in those cities how they're going to try to get rid of single stream because they saw it on the horizon.
We've been talking about that for a long time here, both in this committee and. I mean, I was in the legislature when the transition went to accept single stream, which I think was a terrible decision at that point, especially to allow Kingston to bring it in and then to allow the haulers, because it kind of put the writing on the wall. But I do think that the board needs to start having a discussion, because for years, you've seen the writing on the wall. You've been talking about it to this committee for the last 4 years at least. I mean, in our trips to Oneida-Herkimer, I didn't understand why Oneida-Herkimer seemed to be solvent with their single stream when we were starting to see writing on the wall. I wonder how they're doing now. Is it the same?
I don't know. I haven't spoken to Bill.
I think it's worth discussing. I wonder.
But they're different, though, because they have a single stream facility. I don't have that.
Right.
You know, we're just a pass-through. That's all we are. Mm-hmm. You know, if you bring me dual stream, I can take it. You know, I can do something with it, but I can't do anything with a single stream. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes. You know, I've been in this business long enough now. I've been doing this for 8 years, and I've seen the markets go up and down and up and down. So I told I told the board, at least through email, not to worry too much yet. We're losing money, but you know, we still got money in reserves to cover that. But let's just see how this settles out, because this initiative we knew was going to hit the first of the year, and it's spiking. But it may, if I knew what was going to be, because this is tied directly to commodities too. Not only that, but with tariffs with China and what's going on in China, this is tied worldwide. So, you know, I don't know what the stock market's going to do tomorrow. And if I did, I'd be on Wall Street right now. I wouldn't be working at the RRA. But let's see how this plays out. It may start to spike and it may start to come down again. I don't know, and level out. I do believe, and I'll let you know in an email that I sent to the board today. Because I don't want to spike our prices either. I want to try to ride this out and smooth it over for as best as we can, you know, for the city of Kingston and for the other single stream people that bring it into us. If we have to raise our rates after the second quarter of the year, bring it up a little more. You know, maybe the third quarter, bring it up a little more. I just don't want to spike it right away. What we're feeling, I want to be able to absorb that, and that's one of the reasons why we plan ahead with having enough in reserves for these issues. So that's my own personal feeling, how I want to run with it. And I think the board is on my side. I don't want to, I don't want to spike and all of a sudden have an overnight price increase to the city of Kingston. I just don't want to do that. So
I just wonder, it seems to me that we need to have the infrastructure here in the U.S. to process this, because regardless of the surcharges, it's my understanding that China is just not taking our materials. And they have a steady stream of material. It seems to me that we need to be able to process, local self-reliances.
I said that to someone today. I said, I hope the manufacturing takes off in this country so we can use it here.
Yeah.
Rather than relying on
China. We kind of need better quality recycling for that to happen, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, man, because I said the exact same thing to one of the board members today on the phone. I said, gosh, I hope the manufacturing sector takes off, so I don't have to rely on China.
If you had, I could have raised my hand. If you had ultimate resources and the ultimate say and ultimate cooperation, what would you do here with Ulster County? Are there things that you wish you could do that you can't that would help any of the things we're talking about? Have you asked for things and not gotten it? Do you have any solutions that you think are doable?
Oh, no, I have a great working relationship with the county. I have for 8 years.
No, not in a negative way. I just mean, man, if we had more money, we could do this.
Let me put it this way. Westchester is a perfect example of this. Westchester saw the writing on the wall years ago, and they retrofitted their plant. It was an old dual stream. They retrofitted. They made the decision at that time not to go single stream, and it was a smart decision. And they stayed dual stream, and that's what they're taking in down there. I'm going to back up. I was going to say, I think it's through legislative means that it has to be dual stream, but I don't know that for certain. But there's a lot of places around the U.S. where you have to stay dual stream, and you can't go to single stream. I don't know if that's something that could be looked at. If it's something that the board would entertain. The only thing is, if you do that,
do you get less recyclables that way, though? Is that a
that's a fight that's regular. If you go to any of these there's a recycling conference every year in Cooperstown in November every year, and believe me, you get some very staunch environmental people at this conference, especially this one. I go to three conferences a year, and this is. And you'll be in a room and start talking about single stream and dual stream recycling, and people are at each other's throats from the same environmental communities, because there's a strong belief on one side with the dual stream. It's a pure product. You get a much better quality product out of it. It's worth a lot more. But the studies have shown you do get a little less recycling. Whereas a single stream, the recycling rates seem to go up a little bit. But the flip side of that is more of it ends up in the landfill anyway, mm-hmm. because more of it's contaminated.
Yeah.
You know, and the one thing you do get in a single stream, and I was just talking to a board member about this today too, about the contamination in the single stream, is you also get, and this is going to sound funny, but I heard someone, a speaker say this at the conference, he called it wish cycling.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I don't know if you ever heard that term. It was a really interesting term. And he went on and he said, when you have single stream, what you tend to have is you have a mindset of people. When you say to people, throw everything in one bin. So all your recycling goes in this bin, all the garbage goes in this bin, and that's all you got to do. So when you get that mindset, people are like, all right, I got this rubber garden hose. I think it's recycling, but I'm not sure. They psychologically, they want to do the right thing. And they're like, well, you know, since I'm not sure, I'm going to put in with the recycling and let them take it out if they need to, because I'd rather do that than throw it in the garbage and it'll never get recycled. So you get this wish cycling. So you end up with faucets in there, you know, from bathroom sinks and all sorts of stuff, and it damages the equipment. They got to shut down lines for things that aren't. Whereas with dual stream, when you tell people, look, the plastic jugs go in this bin, the glass goes in this bin, the paper goes, you know, it's pretty well set. You don't have that wish cycling going on.
Now, if, as a pass-through agency, if the determination was made that we need to switch back to dual,
the process?
Yeah, well, is there a place where you would, is there a place that would accept it from us, or would that be?
Well, we have a dual stream plant.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The question is, you know, if you were to, let's say, flow control recycling, mm-hmm. required all to be dual, come to our plant, we would have to have a serious discussion first on how much we think we can get in and how much I can process at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, our MRF was built in the early 2000, 2002. I think it went online, so it's, you know, 16 years old now. But
right now, the material you're getting in is saleable. Right now, what's coming in dual stream?
And the dual stream we get, just so you know, and I know Tracy and Amanda know this, but the dual stream we get is only from the municipalities, I mean, not City Kingston.
Right. Yeah.
But we service 15 town transfer stations, and in that 5-year agreement we have with them, is they're not allowed to go single stream. They have mm-hmm. to stay dual for that agreement, and that agreement's up at the end of 20. So because they have to stay dual stream, the only dual stream that we get in our plant is from those 15 towns. You know, it's the town of Olive and Hurley.
And the rest is all single stream?
The rest of it is single stream.
So
the biggest customer is the City of Kingston. I'm sure the biggest.
City of Kingston is larger.
It's large, but we also have, you have the big haulers bringing in single stream.
Yeah, we have Welsh brings in a lot of single stream to us. And we get a lot, we have a lot of the small haulers. We have a lot of mom and pop, you know, especially after flow control happened. One nice thing about flow control, in my opinion, is that it helped the small business person mm-hmm. because they were able to compete with the large haulers. Prior to that, the large haulers were getting such a deep discount, the small guy couldn't compete with the waste management. But now that everybody's paying the same tipping fee, now it comes down to customer service, and now the small haulers can compete. And we saw a rise in the small haulers, which we expected.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you would find, though, is if you did that, all these small haulers are all single stream as well. So all these women and men that have these packers that are, you know, they only have 2 or 3 packers maybe for all of their whole business, they have nowhere else to go but our agency. You know, they don't have another outlet. You know, they're like waste management. We don't hardly actually get any waste management, and they take it to their own facility up the road.
Can I just also say for the new members, just stop me if you already know it, but we are the only county in the state that's not allowed by enabling legislation to have flow control of recycling, and there's been a lot of discussion about why that existed in our enabling legislation. It's very strange. And over the past years, we have debated the benefit of even asking for the change with the potential of allowing for flow control of regulated recyclables. There was initially pushback from the communities, from municipalities, who misunderstood the discussion to extend to scrap metal and resources that they actually make money on individually, when we were only talking about regulated recyclables. And what we're really facing, if we don't address, to your earlier point about what's in a dream world, what do we do? I think we have to really have that conversation in earnest, because at some point, the agency, if the numbers continue to rise, the agency is going to have to push that money back to the actual people generating the single stream, which is City of Kingston and some of these smaller haulers. And what's going to happen if they don't pay the cost, if that stuff ends up in a landfill, we're going to have to really up our regulation because it's illegal to throw out a can or a plastic jug. And if we start to actually push in terms of enforcing regulation, you're talking about serious fines as they were written back in the 80s, I want to say. So it's looming as a very big potential problem that I think we have to have real conversations about what do we do, how do we solve this for everybody.
Would that help at all? I mean, in a real quantifiable way?
Flow control of regulated recyclables, dual stream
to join every other county in the state. When I hear every other county does something, if it makes sense.
Every other county's allowed. Not everyone does, okay. but other county's allowed.
So we wouldn't.
See the way it works, you know, we're a separate authority, obviously, from the county. So when we were created, the people that wrote the Enabling Act at that time wrote that in to the Act. Just like our Enabling Act says no elected officials can sit on our board. If you're an elected official, and I'm sure you all know John Parity. John Parity sat on our board. He was elected to the legislature. He had to leave. Mm-hmm. Jack Hayes, who's on our board right now, ran for town board of Gardner. Had he won, he'd have to leave. So back then, they didn't want elected officials on the board. They wanted, I was told, I wasn't around at the time, but I was told they wanted business people on the board to run the agency.
They were trying to insulate the decision to site a landfill is really what they were trying to do back then. It's pretty right. well established.
They wanted to keep it at arm's length.
They wanted to make it about a different agency making that decision versus the legislature. Yeah.
So the political beings weren't involved at all. You know, go blame the agency. That was the idea at the time. There's some that, like Oneida Herkimer, they don't mention either way in their Enabling Act. So you could have elected officials on it if you want. You don't have to. It's up to you. Anyway. The point is this, that when you talk about changing our Enabling Act, which will take some time, you may want to look at see if Gus is going to go through first, because if Gus goes through, you're starting from ground zero, so you, as well as the other counties, can write any Enabling Act that you want. Mm-hmm. You know, who's going to get
well, that the state legislature has to pass it.
But the state legislature would pass it, but I think that's more of a rubber stamp when it by the time
but
it gets to them.
But you can come up with the plan without having to go through.
What would essentially happen if Gus goes through? Then if it looks like it's going to go through, then the three counties are going to have to set up a working group. So you have representatives from each three counties, and then what you would have to do is they would have to sit down and figure out what's the act going to look like. You know, like I'll give you some examples. Can board members be compensated? Our act says you cannot be compensated. There's other board members and other solid waste authorities that do get compensated. You know, are there elected officials on the board? Does it matter? How many board appointments you get from each county? So these are all things that are in, as well as bonding. Bonding is in the Enabling Act, too. So these are all things, when I get back to the flow control recycling, if Gus is going to go through, that's one of the things you could address at that time. And you could... You could leave that part out. In ours, says you can't recycle, just leave that out.
You'd be crazy to take away the potential power.
Let me ask you this. When you're talking about the cost of retrofitting or going back to a two-stream, a strictly two-stream, and the cost net, is that something you're going to do? Could you come up with fairly decent numbers yourself, or would you be hiring an outside firm and need money for a study if we're going to have a serious conversation about that?
I could probably come up with some rough numbers as far as... Well, first of all, I could probably come up with some rough numbers. How much recycling is out there? Can we handle it? That's the first question. Yeah. If our facility can handle it, if we did make that determination, there's nothing that needs to be done. We can run the facility as it is. But if it looks like it's we can't handle it, we have to start getting an area we've got to start adding on to the facility, and that's when you have to hire an engineering firm.
Well, if you want to start looking, I think we're open to having the conversation in a serious way. If you start looking at those numbers, it would help us.
Okay.
And one last thing, is there anything the community does? You talked about wishful recycling that costs you, that's quantifiable. Man, if the community didn't do this or put this in there, it would be, I'd have real savings. Is there anything like that? Because we could do a PSA. We have three or four PSAs we run constantly.
Right.
But we could easily do a PSA that informs the community on things, especially if there's going to be real savings. Hey, just so you know, let's not throw this in there. You know, they'd make it sound nice.
I was talking to Tracy about coming up with some kind of educational component, because I'm not even sure if I'm doing everything.
I know. I put my wife is always pointing out that doesn't, you know, just because that's plastic, that kind of wrapper doesn't. She's always taking it out, and I, you know, that right when you said that, I know I don't put hoses
so
in there.
Come up with
some people don't even know there's a law.
No.
There's a lot of people who don't even know what's required. They just think they're doing good, or that it's something that feels good to do, but not that it's an obligation.
Yeah. There's a lot of we get grant money for that kind of stuff. We do spend a little bit of money. If you ever thought there was something that would quantifiably help if the people of the community knew, don't do this, we could, I mean, we're running radio ads all the time to tell you to get flu shots and everything else. We could certainly run an environmental one that informs people not to throw something away, and I bet you'd see something. So pass that along, too. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But I also think maybe we can have Merlin come, you know, in each town you know, to make it more, because people...
Oh, that's... Can you talk about the thing that Merlin talked about the going to schools with the recycling? Maybe we could have Merlin come here, but I feel like legislators, she said she's only gotten responses from certain towns, and I wondered if the school districts that I represent responded. I mean, I didn't get to speak to her, but I think all legislators would be very interested in helping her to facilitate that conversation, because the recycling coordinator has been starting to go to schools and make presentations to whole assemblies of children, which are future recyclers. Yeah. I mean, that's...
We do do that, and we do go out quite a bit to the schools. I think what you're talking about is the compost bins.
That's exactly what it is.
We had a plethora of compost bins, and that we had from a truckload sale a few years ago, and they don't sell that quickly. For some reason, people love rain barrels. We sell a lot of rain barrels, but the compost bins we don't. So we said, well, to get rid of these, let's do this. You know, let's send out a letter to all the schools in the county, offering them compost bins for free. We'll come in, we'll do a demonstration. And that's what she was talking about.
And you put
about.
Your foods, have the school put their food scraps in it.
Who's already in it and who isn't yet, so we can try to promote it.
Can you ask her to
get us a list of who's responded?
You know, to see if we can help.
Yeah.
Sure. I know she just did Plattekill. I know she did a school in Plattekill this week or last week or something.
And also I want to talk to you, Tim, about either in April or May having our meeting at the RRA, like we did 6 years ago.
Oh, sure.
6 years ago.
Remember?
Yeah.
So we could do, I know, isn't that crazy? So to do a tour, because it was really beneficial, to actually see it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, you're more than welcome. Just let me know when you want to come, and I'll make sure we provide a tour.
Why don't you recommend to us, based on the mud issue, remember there was a whole... Was April too soon? Remember we made a decision based on weather because it was pretty muddy out there.
It does get a little muddy, so I'd bring some boots.
Okay. And it was kind of dark a little. It was dark the night we went.
I think we went in March.
I think May, or I think it's better to wait just a little longer so you have more light and
less May 3rd. So
goop.
I'll give you a call tomorrow.
Matta?
Okay.
I just want to be sure we mentioned there was a solid waste management improvement committee, and we're hoping to just wrap that up and get that information over to you and to the consultants, because I think
and to the committee, I think, for the new members, it would be really helpful. We can even get you a draft where it's at now.
And the other thing I want to be sure, and I apologize, I had trouble with the charger for being late, but did you make it clear the article in the Freeman made it seem like there were potential landfill sites for future rather than existing O&M costs for closed land. I just want to be sure.
We didn't talk about that, but I think we're all aware of a couple of things in the paper.
If anyone saw that, I want to be sure the legislators
was a letter
know
to the end today.
That was
that corrected
trying to
it.
Correct
yeah.
That,
yeah.
We sent the letter in the day after that came out. Letting the Freeman basically know, and I'm sure you read the letter to the editor, that it was false information that was provided by the reporter. And you know, it's unfortunate. There are three closed landfills. I know when I sent the letter out, I copied every legislator whose district were in those three towns, and I copied the three town supervisors that day, and they were all sent through email. So everyone was advised of it. But it was clear on the sheet.
He wasn't allowed to see the presentation. I'm not blaming his error, because he should have called to check, but I do want to speak to that Gus presentation, not in detail, and there's no reporters here, but we are on tape, but there was nothing in that meeting that warranted an executive session, and it's a tough way to kick off sort of a public effort. And I know that there's real concern because it's such a hotbed issue as it connects to landfill siting, but in fact there was nothing in that presentation about siting a landfill. So it strikes me as tactically a giant error to have an executive session for something that was explicitly not what was stated. And I know that's not your call, but I'm saying I really was disappointed about that, in that I think we could have saved a lot of kind of heartache, especially once I saw the presentation and saw it was effectively numbers crunching of what the three existing agencies are and what it would mean if the three existing agencies combined with exactly their current resources. I'm very much looking forward to a conversation that extends beyond, that talks about what GUS would mean in a bigger picture, in the siting of a landfill or the involvement with a new technology, something that ultimately, and what I've always articulated, ultimately spoke to self-reliance for this county, because that's what I've been most impressed with, seeing Oneida, Herkimer, and Delaware County, these other counties that contain their own future. And I think that issues related to recycling, but also issues related to disposal of waste. I mean, we see lifespans on some of the biggest landfills in the region are nearing an end. And so what is that going to mean to us if we don't do something? These are exciting conversations to be having with other communities. I think it's worth talking about other communities, but I think the kickoff was very ill-advised by the RRA's council, and I'm being very generous saying that because I witnessed what he said it was about and attended the executive session and never heard any of that discussed. So it's just, while the reporter made errors, I think if the reporter actually got to hear the presentation and ask questions, there would have been no errors because it really was a number-crunching presentation. Now, the report's a different story, but that's in terms of what was presented to the board that day, I think that was very ill-advised. I know both Man and I were there, and unfortunately no one else from the committee was there, but we're all going to get to see it. We're all going to get to see the presentation, and I think there's a lot
coming. It just could have prevented the misinformation,
yeah.
Which I spoke with Bill Kemble about, and he said that whoever, and I've had this happen too, where the story says one thing and then, they beef it up or they put a headline that he had no intention. So I don't know how much, but I think I have to say I agree with Tracy, and it was disappointing because I was kind of in the middle and Tracy was in the middle of trying to answer the question, why is this an executive session? And so I asked the appropriate people, and then I had the same impression that Tracy did. And I really think, I don't know who's, because you can't, it would have to come from the board to speak with the attorney. You're not in a position to do that, but I think somebody needs to. I agree with Tracy in that I understand it was a preliminary meeting, but by preliminary, you didn't have to do a whole big announcement or whatever, just invite those people. But if a reporter was there, unless there was a serious reason to call it an executive session, I think it would have worked better.
Who makes that decision?
The board.
The attorney.
Well, the board. The attorney advised the board,
yeah.
But the allowable reasons for executive sessions are very plainly spelled out, very, very plainly. And the reasons given were contract negotiations and land purchase. That's not what was discussed. So, and in terms of personnel or contract negotiations, only collective bargaining is allowed to be discussed in executive session. All the rest has to be discussed in public. I mean, I did speak to one board member because I understand the sensitivity of releasing a draft that may be inaccurate to the public when it's a sensitive matter. But my experience in the legislature, when we get something in a draft form, we don't get it when there's a majority of the legislature sitting at a meeting discussing, and it's circulated on an agenda to be discussed. It may be emailed in draft form, and you provide comment back, and we're each at our own homes. We're not, once a quorum meets, you are a public body. It's a notice meeting. And you're bound by the sunshine laws. And so, it's unfortunate. And frankly, I mean, I don't think there was anything in that report that, if that report was about citing a landfill, even without selecting a site, yes, it would have been a heated discussion. But we're even coming out, I think, the other side of that, what Saugerties experienced years ago. I mean, those days, the environmentalists were against the siting of the landfill. Now we're coming to another side, and landfills aren't what we imagined. And I'm not saying we're going to site a landfill. I'm not saying what we're going to do, but I think we do. We have to be prepared to weather the storm and sort of educate the public on whatever it is we decide we're going to do. And I think that can't begin by shutting the public out through this one reporter who happened to be there. I mean, literally, we went into an executive session with 24 invited guests, and the only person who had to leave the room was the reporter.
It doesn't sound
very good.
It wasn't
Tim's decision. No. But
we could always sign an email and fire it off that the environmental committee was just, you know.
I think what Amanda said, I think having some conversation that somehow can get through to understand the mindset of the attorney's recommendation would be a start. It doesn't have to come from the whole committee, but I think it would be helpful moving forward. Because you want something like this to begin on the right foot and to work. A lot's at stake. I mean, I do think we're heading into a very uncertain time. A lot of writing is on the wall, not just about recyclables, but about waste. I mean, I think until we find a way that we can, like I said, own our own future, it's a very unsettled ground.
As far as the waste is concerned, you got probably about 10 years.
That's gonna go by in a blink.
In my personal opinion.
Yeah, it's going to go by in a blink. And so if we don't do something...
And then you're going to have to make some of these big decisions. Please give us a shot. I'm here to really push things and act on things. So if you have ideas, even if they're big money ideas, give us a shot to see what we can go and find. But there's a lot of extra money in the budget, I know that.
The Gus thing is a big deal. And the reason is because of this. You know, there's an economy of scale. I heard you say earlier, business, you know, you understand the economy of scale when you deal with like Walmarts and things like that. It's the same thing in the waste industry. You know, we do 120,000 tons a year, MSW and C&D. Green does about 60, and so does Sullivan, 55, 60. So when you put those numbers together, you know, you're probably doing 240 a year, you know, with MSW and C&D. So if you're doing 240 a year, that gives you a lot of buying power, okay, when you have that. And matter of fact, one of the legislators from Green, when we first talked about this idea, is a businessman himself. And he said right off the bat, he goes, you know, with that buying power, he goes, you're definitely going to save money. He goes, I can tell you that right now. You know, when you operate individually, as all three counties, you don't have that weight. So even if you're going to keep trucking, you're still going to save money. What that does open up to you, though, is it opens up a lot of avenues as far as final disposal options. You know, whether that's there's one option where you can actually literally dry the garbage out and you can feed it into cement kilns. You know, that's one option. There's another facility out of Canada that's turning the garbage into ethanol. You know, unfortunately, that one, though, they don't even want to talk to you unless you're doing 350 a year. It doesn't make the economics don't work to build a plant. It just doesn't work. There's not enough waste to keep it moving. So, but when you start getting in the 230 range and the 240 range that we're talking, it does open up more ideas. You know, I was
satisfied looking at that rough draft and how many voting members we have, and you're satisfied with the Ulster counties, the what we get there,
the board number of board members,
all that kind of stuff. Or what
that's
the deals
up to you guys.
Yeah, that's
going to be as the executive director, I can tell you from a technical and financial standpoint what can work and what can't work. As far as representation for the counties, that's going to be between you and the other counties.
If you ever have an opinion on something like that, pass it along, because I may not look at it and have a good feel for whether we're getting,
I can tell you this,
we're going to have the kind of influence we want. I mean, we're the biggest
we're definitely
player
the
there.
Biggest.
Yeah.
Did you see the report?
I did, yeah.
Okay. I'm going to take my executive hat off for a second, and I want to just speak personally. The way the board members are laid out, I think, is a good idea. We talked from day one when this whole thing first started. We started talking to Sullivan and Green, and we started talking about board appointments. We said Ulster should have by far the most,
yep,
because we have a greater population, we have the greater waste. Now, how should that pan out? Well, we talked about having five from Ulster, three from Sullivan, three from Green. That way, Ulster will never have all the power. Green and Sullivan can always outvote Ulster at any time. Which was, I don't want to use the word enticing, but it was one of those things that the other two counties latched onto, because, you know, I already heard it said by one of the other counties, well, Ulster's going to be the biggest, and they're going to be like, not the bullies, but they're going to try to run.
Yeah, they're going to.
But you can't run the show if you've got
Green
and Sullivan.
Right.
I thought it looked fair.
Yeah.
So that seems to be a fair way of doing it. You know, so five, three, and three, or you know, a cornerstone put in there. You know, two, two, and three. You know, so either way you look at the 7-person board or an 11-person.
You know, excuse me, just in the for time, is everybody mind, because this is going to be a really lengthy discussion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If we could go to soil and water now, do that.
But can I just make one quick point, which I included in the packet, to the issue of recycling? We under the mandatory source separation and recycling law, we're required. We've talked about this for years. We're required to have a recycling oversight committee. The recycling oversight committee recommends additions to regulated recyclables, recommends removals from regulated recyclables, meets and speaks and communicates with the agency. That committee has not existed since Mann and I sat on it, I don't know, probably eight years ago, it seems like, in just ballparking it.
Probably closer to 10, I think.
Yeah, it could be.
Actually, I've been at the RA for 8 years, and I attended one meeting.
Okay. So, I'd say that was 8 years ago.
Minutes or anything.
Yeah, so we never were given any support, so we just would meet. We need to seed it, and I think it should come from this committee. So I asked Fawn to put in your packet the mandatory source separation law.
I don't know if I gave that to everybody.
Okay, so maybe if not, you can circulate it. We can circulate it. Basically, I'll just say quick. It includes a member of the town supervisors and mayor's association, representative from the city of Kingston, representative from our committee, representative from the county EMC, representative from the waste hauling industry, one from the municipal recycling coordinators, one from the commercial or institutional sector, and one multifamily dwelling interest, and then three at-large members. So it's an 11-member committee. I mean, I think we need to start thinking about who we might recommend to the chair and start getting this going, because in its absence there's definitely a hole, and as we move forward I think that this committee, we always communicated really well with this committee, the recycling oversight committee, communicating with this committee, so I think we just need to make that happen.
Okay.
Over the next few months.
All right. And we can continue our discussion.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. No, I mean, that'll be on the future agendas, but I just want to... Yeah,
this would be going to be taking a long time, and we could maybe...
Mm-hmm.
You probably don't want to hear me in this topic. So, welcome.
Thank you.
Did you have anything you wanted to share, or you just want me to go over the resolution?
Give a few packages of some information for the benefit of our new legislators and for existing.
Great, thank you.
I didn't know what you wanted from me, but they did put together something.
Thank you.
Okay. It's just basic information about background about the district, a little bit of our history. There's a brochure in there, who we are, what we do. kind of highlights our history, our programs and services. It's fairly up to date. We also have a copy of our newsletter, which have our highlights from last year. That is up to date. And then there's a few pictures in the packet that are some of our programs. We've got a couple of street projects, a restoration project we have on the Beaver Kill in the town of Woodstock. There's a vegetative reinforced slope project we did on Woodland Creek in Shandaken. We had a couple ag projects. We had a pipeline component for a rotational grazing system for a horse farm we're currently putting in the town of Shongum. And I think there's a a high tunnel project which extends the growing season. It's for ag viability. It's in the town of Marbletown, and there's a couple of pitches in there of our plant material center, which is located by the county pool, adjacent to the county pool facility in New Paltz. So,
nice.
So there's a few some highlights there and some background information of what we've done
for the you benefit. You do the plant sale in the spring, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yes. Yeah, we do that as well. Well, we've been around since 1965. For those who don't know, we were created by legislative resolution by the county to declare us a soil and water conservation district, and they allocated money for staff to assist the then Soil Conservation Service under USDA. And they went back to the 1930s. They were created under the Dust Bowl legislation from the Depression and the New Deal. Conservation district law evolved there, and starting around 1937 or 1938, counties around the country declared themselves soil and water conservation districts. We made it in April of 65. We are governed by a board of directors who oversee our finances and determine our policy and program direction. We have currently two offices. Our home office is in Highland. We have a satellite office in Shokan that we share with staff from Cooperative Extension and the Department of the Environment to assist New York City DEP with their stream program. At the home office, we're co-located with NRCS, which that was the name. That's now the name of what Soil Conservation Service was in the 1990s. They changed the name. They provide 100% of our office space and our overhead. They provide us with staff and expertise. And we estimate the value of that right now is about $400,000 per year. In the resolution in 65, we were given responsibility for matters of the environment as they pertain to water quality and on farms, stream banks, storm water, hillsides, anything that pertained that was related to the soil and water. We adhere to conservation district law, which gives us and all soil and water districts around the country the ability to work on both public and private land, and that represents a pretty potentially powerful tool for the county or municipal governments. And we've collaborated with both entities and in emergency projects in the past. Most recently, we cooperated with the county on the strainer debris removal project up in Alabama in the town of Shandaken, Mick, in 2016. To do our program, we're basically divided into three program components: our ag planning and implementation, our stream planning and design, implementation and emergency mitigation, and our stormwater program is for stormwater services and workshops and field assessment. We also, you were mentioning the bare root program. We have seasonal programs that don't go year round, but they overlap with one another. Essentially, they go around the horn completely. We just kicked off our bare root program that starts now and goes into the spring. Our fish program starts next month and goes into the summer. The ag assessment soils group worksheets that started in the fall pretty much goes to the spring, sometimes goes into the summer, depends on who shows up. And our plant material center starts in the spring and we go on through the fall. In 2017, we did roughly, I just did the state report, about 917,000 in ag projects for about 60 producers. And we did just about under $1 million in stream implementation on about 7 sites, and just about under 35,000 in stormwater services and activities. I think when I added it all up, it was about $1.95 million in that represents about a 28-to-1 return on the county's our county allocation in 2017. So that's essentially what I had. If you got any, I would encourage you to go over the package if you have a chance. I have contact information there.
Great.
Give me a call if there's any questions you got or if you think there's any way we can help you at any time.
Great.
Thank you.
Basically,
can I just give a heads up?
Again,
for future meetings, we're gonna be looking at the reappointments for members. The legislative members get reappointed annually. I'm currently on the board, as is Jim DeLon. So, okay. I mean, I'd like to be reappointed. I don't know if Jim does. We should talk to him. Bill Wilklow, long-serving member, would like to be reappointed, and I'm recommending to the chair that he be reappointed as well. In addition, so by enabling legislation, we are allowed to have a 5 or 7 or 7-member board. We currently are operating under the 7-member board setup, even though we only had 6 members, and we unfortunately lost a member in the last several months. And that member was a member of the Grange, which is very hard to fill that spot. We've been talking about it in the board for a long time now, because there are not active Granges. So, and we are required also to have a member who is a member. If you have the 7-member board, or even with the 5-member board, you have to have a member that is not representative of the farming community, which we haven't had because we've had legislators and active farmers. So something we have to work out, but it's going to be coming through this committee in the next month. I would say it's probably going to happen over the next couple months, and I've been talking to Gary and the other board members.
Do you know if that's on, because we have that web page for board.
It might be.
Probably should. If it's not.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think the Grange issue is an issue that conservation districts, soil and water conservation boards, the state over, are dealing with because
they recognize this is a problem.
It's
not just in Ulster County. It's
okay. So I need to follow up with the state rep and ask her if it's okay that that position becomes an at-large position, or how do we handle it? Also, mm-hmm. because we have a dedicated. The 3 farmers that are on the board currently are long-standing, dedicated members, none of whom want to give up their seat. So it doesn't make any sense, and it doesn't make sense to get rid of volunteers who are in such good standing and willing to stay. And in this case, they're all active farmers in the community. So we need to get someone from the non-farming community, an at-large member, and we need to just confirm the legislative appointments because that's an annual confirmation. We stay in our position until we're reconfirmed or replaced, but I just want to let everyone know that's going to be coming up, and that discussion will be ongoing. I'll keep the committee up to speed.
We have to reappoint Bill Wilklow as well.
Yeah, that's what I said. Okay. Yeah, and I already talked to Ken about that, but
Well, thank you. So we have resolution 21.
The range was huge.
Mary, can I just say one quick sentence? I just want to say how much Gary and the staff do with a very small skeleton staff. You saw here, mm-hmm. and I just want to commend them. I've worked with them over the years, and it's one of the most cost-effective investments in the county because they get so much done with so little resources.
So little. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, so we have resolution number 21, authorizing the chairman of the Ulster County Legislature to enter into an agreement with Ulster County Soil and Water Conservation District for the 2018 appropriation. So do we have
a second?
Who's going
to
move it?
We have to move it first.
We have to move it first. Sorry. Trying to throw me off here. And so do we have a second?
Yeah, I'll second it.
Okay. Do we have any discussion? So Amanda moved it?
Yeah. And
do you have any discussion? No. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any against? No. Motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you for having me
up.
Thank you.
Nice meeting you. Yep. Nice meeting you all.
Definitely.
Oh, okay. The plant sale that they do, if you ever want ground cover mm-hmm. or pine trees or something like that, you never
My lilac. I got lilacs.
Did you?
Never
How big are they now?
I have a pack of sand, the first year, the second year. Somebody got a little.
I planted pine trees along the border of my property. I had like 5 acres. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to put up a fence. I wanted to sort of delineate my property.
How big are they now?
Some of them were quite big, and some of them were kind of stunted because it was wet. And the myrtle and pachysandra, I have this ground cover in my house. It was all from there. So inexpensive.
It's so reasonable. Yeah.
They bloomed for the first time this year.
That's exciting.
So lilacs. They weren't going to. Okay, so
what does it mean in rough draft? I just don't understand. It says rough draft.
That's what it's always said.
I just noticed it.
Yeah. Okay, do we have anything else we want to discuss before we get on to resolution 23, confirming the reappointment member of the Resource Recovery Agency?
I do want to speak on this subject, but we can.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
the plastic bags. I do want to.
So we'll do that.
Yeah, but we can do that after. Yeah. Let's do this because
so we'll
Tim's
do resolutions.
Here.
Confirming the reappointment of member to Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency, and it would be the reappointment of Fred Guadagnola. So first we have to move it.
I'll move it.
Second.
I'll second.
Okay.
Okay. So on.
So discussion.
On the subject. So. First of all, I really feel, as I've said in years past, that we should be interviewing these people. And I understand that Fred is currently sitting on the board, but in fact, we did not interview him. He was filling a vacancy, and he was the one sitting board member that did not go through an interview process, which I objected to at that point. I also feel that that's even more critical right now, given this time of potentially of Gus, and also of all these issues we touched the surface of earlier in this meeting. I want to talk to an appointment is long term. I mean, this appointment's going to sit for
2020.
Yeah, it's going to sit for years, and so I want to know. I hope that in the time period before 2020, we actually are starting to work toward some specific resolution that includes a whole system. And I want to talk to whoever the potential candidate is about what exactly their vision is. And I don't actually know what Fred's, or frankly, even any other member who's currently on the board's current position is. We haven't gotten the full presentation on Gus, but given what we saw the other day, I think it's an exciting first step, but all it was for me was a peek into, you know, into a window. They didn't really discuss at all what a consolidated agency might mean in terms of looking toward alternative technologies. And as a legislator, I don't want to. I'm not looking to just consolidate our buying power to do the same thing. I mean, with all due respect to that concept. And in fact, if you ran the numbers, which you'll see, if you ran the numbers that they showed us, the numbers would mean an increase to Ulster County. And I don't take them strictly as that, but if you ran those numbers directly across, it would mean an increase to Ulster County and a savings to the other two counties. I am so willing to invest money and time and energy and the county's resources toward a solution. And even when we moved flow control forward, for those of us that were here, we talked about needing a whole system, about committing to flow control as a step toward a whole system. And I think the fact that the agency is talking about Gus is heartening to me, but I'm not prepared to vote for any board member, and I talked to Mary about this on the way, even if it were a minority appointment, I'm not prepared to approve any board member without a discussion with that board member.
So I agree. I think we should interview. What is the process? Can we have him in, can we just push this back a minute and have him in here quick? And I mean, not today, but
No.
But I meant quick. I don't want this to drag on. But I agree. I think we should interview people. You probably have more questions for him than me at this point. But I'm pretty frustrated with especially with these department head appointments that oversee multi-million dollar budgets. I don't think we grill them nearly enough on what their approach is for streamlining and savings in the budget. And the next appointment that comes down the line, I'm going to be going, doing a lot of research and asking a lot of questions. When it comes to this, though, just even an appointment like this, I do think that somebody should be interviewed each and every time we appoint them, whether it's a year or two or more. So I'm in agreement on that. I think that's a fair...
Well, my question would be, when does Mr. Watnall's current term expire?
It already
December.
Did.
It already did. So there's the vacancy on the board then?
No, he's on the board. You stay in the position until you're... Just like Soylent Moore, you stay in the position until you're replaced or reappointed.
And that's right in our Enabling Act. That's
yeah,
right.
So he's in his position. He's the chairman of the board. If we were to do nothing and argue about it for the next 10 years, he stays in that position. He'd extend
well
beyond.
Can we schedule him for an interview next month at the next meeting? I mean, would it work like that?
I guess so.
I agree. I think that there's no harm. Fred will be there and sharing. And
well, not only that, with the questions we ask, we're going to set him off. We're asking him to answer some questions about what he prioritizes, how he feels about something. At the very least, he may go back into that board understanding the kinds of things we're hoping he's going to work on. The next time he's up for another appointment, then we have something that we can then say, we asked you about this and what you're going to do about this. How did that go? And then we actually have a way of judging the performance for these multi-term appointees. I think that's the biggest thing you get out of interviewing somebody like that. Mm-hmm. But I'm awful. I agree.
So we have to have a motion for what we're doing.
Well,
right?
we would. We moved it to put it on the table. We would make a motion. We don't have to. No, we cannot act. And
so
we can
vote to not act.
We don't have to vote to not act. We can not act, or we can vote to hold it until next month and interview in the
meantime.
Yeah, we can postpone it till the next meeting.
Right, so
I would make a I'll do that. I'll make a motion to postpone it to the next meeting, but with the understanding that we would get Fred in and have an interview.
Right. Okay.
And so I don't know, but I hope we word it in a way where he understands this isn't personal. This is this is a new thing going forward that we're going
to
interview.
We've been trying to
do
that for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, we need a second. We need to postpone.
I second.
Okay, well, let Joe second it.
That's fine.
And I'm voting yes to postpone, and I have to excuse myself.
I think I have a resolution that's first on the list over there. How does that work? Do I run over there for a second?
Ask if they can move it back just a touch, or if it's a quick one, you can.
Do you need me?
She can move to.
I guess he has to do something at the.
They're going to be voting on the resolution that passed 6-1.
I'll ask Dean to wait till
we still
get there.
Okay.
If not, can you come in and grab it?
Okay.
If Dean refuses to hold it,
it'll take me 2 minutes, and I'll be right back. I don't. You tell me what is usually done in this situation. Would we tell her?
Yeah, we don't usually have that. Yeah.
Okay. We don't normally do this. We don't normally have. Yeah. And
we usually wouldn't be an issue.
Yeah. It usually wouldn't be an issue. You know, historically, Mary and I were talking about this. This committee, which is something I love about this committee, historically this committee is the committee that meets the longest, and that's over many
years. We're putting it right up front for you.
And it's because we have real conversations and we debate.
Last night.
Yeah,
we've gone 3.5 hours.
We have.
Not to scare you.
That doesn't.
But I think it's good. We really work through the issues. We discuss things.
Well, it's usually like more than one. Like we're dealing with a bunch of issues, not like just one thing.
Yeah.
For,
but it's rare that we have a 5-minute meeting like some other committees.
Yeah,
I don't recall ever.
Tim takes longer than 5 minutes.
So
I like
talking
trash.
We appreciate you. Yeah, we appreciate you coming and.
Do you need me for the plastic bag thing, or do you want me to?
You know, if you want, do you want to just start talking about the plastic bag?
We can. Yeah. We might as well. And then,
okay.
I mean, because it's not going to something that's going to be resolved tonight.
No,
anyway,
it's not.
Public hearing, right?
It's nothing yet. Right now, it's just we're not moving it tonight. It's for next month.
No,
Dave put it in.
Dave's isn't going to come up.
Do you want to stay then?
It's up to you.
I'm
here for you guys.
Have you seen Dave's resolution? I don't know how it's different from.
There's some problems. Which I talked to Dave about, not in detail, but I talked to Dave about my concern about.
This is going to come up to vote in March, probably, to set a public hearing.
So I called Dave when I saw it. This is something.
Can I miss something?
I called Dave when I saw this because this is something that we've been working on in this committee for since 2016. We've been working through a lot of the nuances and the details, which I asked Fawn to put in. Did you send it? You sent it to everybody, yeah. Right? The initial draft of what we did in 16, which was the draft for discussion.
It should be in your packets.
Yeah. So some of what we came up against.
And then the discussion from the minutes.
Right.
Yeah, and that was the first discussion. There's a more discussion that we could go over. But some of what we came up against, first of all, obviously it was a different legislature, and there was concern about actually being able to get it passed, which is always something that I'm concerned about, especially about things that I want to see happen. You know, how do we build consensus? How do we get people on board? Some of the sticking points of discussion in the earliest phases were about whether we just a ban or we do the hybrid, the ban plus the charge. And there were definite members of the legislature, including members of the committee, who were opposed to any charge. If you assume that there is a charge, and I'll circle back around, if you assume that there is a charge, one of the next issues of discussion was about, and you can stop me anytime, mm-hmm. If my memory is not serving me well. One of the next issues of discussion was about whether or not we allow for any exemptions based on whether or not you're on TANF, food stamps, or et cetera, like programs.
From the consumer.
From the consumer, right. So if you were, there was some discussion about whether or not, and there is examples of legislation that allows, if you, for example, are purchasing something with food stamps or with a public assistance, that you would be exempted. And we fully went back and forth that why should anyone be exempted? What if it's going to hurt people? Well, it's not going to hurt people.
Also, I think that a plastic bag ban is going to be somewhat hard for some people to take. And if you were to put that on top where some people weren't paying it,
right, we went round robin, back and forth. So that was another point of discussion. Another issue was about what stores were going to be covered. Was it going to be just food, essentially places that sold food, like supermarkets, convenience stores, et cetera?
Takeout restaurants.
Or was it going to include restaurants? And then the next level, the one would be just the retail sales of food, not prepared, not strictly restaurants. Then it would extend to restaurants, and then the further extension would be to everything, which would include clothing stores and, you know, everything.
But
Target.
Also, I think to back it up a little teeny bit is when I went into it gung-ho about the plastic bag ban, I was thinking paper bags and then didn't realize that we're paying on the end environmentally in the front.
Right,
with paper bags,
and the issue that came up repeatedly when it was being discussed as a ban only was the particular negative impact that it would have on small businesses. In that, what they've seen across the country when it's a ban only is that the stores continue to offer the alternative, not even speaking to the environmental impact of that and the fact that it doesn't change any habits. But they offer the alternative at a great increase to their bottom line because paper bags cost much more than the plastic bags. So they're offering them free, and all our local businesses would feel the hurt. So we heard from local businesses that came, local businesses that wanted this to happen and wanted it to happen at the county level so there was some uniformity and wanted basically to be able to say, they made me do it. And I could totally appreciate that. Then the city passed its legislation, which was not a ban, but a fee only. And the governor stepped in and put a quash to it with some pretty clear language about the businesses profiteering from basically legislated profiteering because they were charging 5 cents per bag, and a bag does not cost 5 cents. Plastic bag. So they were allowing stores to make all this money off of selling plastic bags. So that and the governor formed a commission, which I asked Fawn to circulate the report. The report just came out. So we were waiting to see what the governor was going to do because... Because the governor also had said, informing the commission, that he was forming the commission to report back to him so that he could act swiftly on a statewide solution. Something that this committee has seen, which the legislation speaks to, is we've seen the not just the environmental havoc that it wreaks, but in going to many of the systems, you know, to the other counties and seeing their landfills and their recycling facilities and the waste-to-compost facility, plastic bags were kind of a repeat singular problem next to fabrics, I'd say, in terms of all of these processes where they gum up the works.
Especially the MRFs.
Yeah, the MRFs, they make a mess, they stop things. So there's a real further want and need to do it. I'm obviously, just speaking to you since you're the only one who doesn't know right now, I'm obviously a strong, strong, strong proponent of moving forward with ridding the county and being on the forefront of this, of these plastic bags. But for me, I've come to the point where it has to be the hybrid. It has to include the charge on the other end in order to change habits. Some of the issues with what Dave has put in don't take some of those things into consideration, and I talked to him about that as well. And I talked to him before I actually read it because he had put it in without discussing it with anybody that I know of. So in his, and I just want to raise it to the committee, he's saying that if you look at his, oh, that's mine. If you look at his, the prohibition... And these are things we're going to have to work out because, again, this is not going to... I know we have new members who are for it, and Dave now being for it is great, but we're still going to have to work out a lot of these details. And the first thing being that in his Section 4, which is the pertinent section, it says that no store shall provide a single-use carry-out bag to a customer. So... essentially, to point out the differences between the legislation we were talking about and this legislation on the first step bans all single-use carryout, which includes paper, it includes recyclable, it includes compostable. So he's saying you can provide any single-use carryout bag, but in the next step it says a store can make it available for sale. So you can't provide it for free, but you can provide it for sale for a minimum charge of 5 cents. So there we're facing the first problem that the governor pointed out with the New York City charge, and that is we are legislating, and the governor's argument, while I didn't agree with it at first, was pretty well articulated by its attorneys. We are legislating profiteering on the cheapest form of plastic bag, because if we were to pass this as is, we're saying you can sell a single-use plastic bag for a minimum charge of 5 cents when it costs a fraction of a penny. So now we're saying to all these stores, you can make money on these plastic bags. We might be changing habits, but I'm not sure it would hold up in court, that aspect of it.
Can I just ask a fundamental question, if you don't mind? The definition single-use carry bag, okay, is there an industry, is there like a standard as far as the mill, the plastic?
Yeah, and I was going to get to that. The standard that's largely used, which is something we discussed at length, that you often see, is exactly what's here, the 2.25, and it's exactly what was in my first draft. But the environmentalists and the activists that came to our meeting said the 2.25 was too small. And I can get you articles that show that what happens is the stores that can afford it just get a bag that's just over 2.25. It looks exactly like a throwaway plastic bag. It does not look like those heavy propylene bags. And they eat the cost. You can buy them on Amazon for 10 cents a bag. So probably if you're buying them by the millions, you know, you buy them for less than 5 cents a bag. So that's the second problem.
And that's consistent. I mean, like, so because the reason I ask, like, different stores, different retail outlets may source these bags from various places. So is that a standard? Like if they?
Well, we were told that if we wanted it to be truly reusable bags, that we would need to up the mill. And what I've seen in the most, there's a bunch of websites where you could look at various legislation, and then there's also those activist sites. They suggest 4 mL. And 4 mL is probably smaller than a lot of the reusable plastic. I mean, because what we're really trying to do, and the other thing I would recommend before this goes live, whatever it is instead of creating a local law regulating the use of single-use plastic carry-out bags, which, in fact, this legislation does a lot more than that. It's regulating all single-use, and we have to discuss the difference, is talking about encouraging the use of let's make it sound positive instead of begin with the negative. And I, you know, in my initial draft, which was 2 years ago, I began with a negative too. But I think over this time, we need to talk about this, about encouraging the use of reusable bags, because that's really what we're ultimately trying to do.
Really, if you use them, it's so much easier.
Yeah, it is. And
because you can fit so much more, and then they're not breaking all over.
Right.
I'll tell you, Adams incentivizes their customers to use them because they'll give you a 5-cent credit for every bag.
And Price Shopper, too.
Is that right?
Shopper,
yeah.
Too.
It used to be, ShopRite, too. ShopRite.
But here's the funny thing. So you can fit in my carrier thing, I can fit what 3 or 4 bags will fit.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's one thing, they'll give you
one
credit for one bag.
Yeah. So,
but still, it's something.
I mean, I think we still, and I'll talk to Dave in more detail about the flaws that I talked in broad strokes to him on the phone about, based on what he was telling me it was going to be, because we worked through a lot of these issues, in this committee, and he was unaware of that report and he hadn't read it. And the report doesn't say what to do, but the report speaks to the 2.25 mLs and make suggestions. I mean,
it does talk about different scenarios.
Yeah.
Like if you just ban this is...
And I want to say, just to be out front with the committee, I personally am for, but I can be swayed. I'm totally open to negotiation. I want to, like I said last time, I want to move something that will pass with the support of the public, with the support of the legislature and the business community and the public, what seems most functional and successful to me is the hybrid combination of the full ban of the single-use plastic and the charge for all the single-use alternatives. Again, what I saw in terms of a problem with what Dave proposed is. He's at the 2.25 mil. We were told that that's too narrow, that businesses that can afford it just get 2.26 mil. They look like throwaway bags still. That's the first problem. The second is that he's saying no single-use bag can be given out, but they can make single-use bags available for a minimum charge of 5 cents. Five cents is way too high for a single-use plastic bag, the standard throwaway plastic bag currently. And in fact, that was the aspect that brought down the New York City legislation, because it was legislating profiteering to businesses. The alternative fee, allowing for the alternative fee, and what's standard is 10 cents, but that was our biggest sticking point in our earlier discussions, is really to help the businesses and your business owner offset the transition. But the fee also changes habits, because the fee, people don't want to pay 5 cents for something they got for free the last 20 years. So they stop. They start to bring their own bags.
Oh, yeah.
That's what's shown to happen. So I think there needs to be a fee. But
are we talking about food stores?
How about,
to have that conversation,
how
too.
How about, are we hiring somebody to go around the county and regulate this, or we're just relying?
Well, here, this is the other thing. So there's a couple other things that I believe that whatever we move forward would probably be enforced through, most logically, though we'll have to talk to the executive, Department, most logically through the Department of the Environment. And we'll have to see how that works. It's if we're sticking with stores that sell food, we don't have the benefit. They don't. They don't, because it's the. It's not the same. Remember how grocery stores were separate. So I think it would involve. We would, if we were being responsible, we would have to. Two things. I think we'd have to dedicate some funds to enforcement, to making sure that we're getting out. In some communities, they rely on complaints, but you know, it's ultimately up to us.
It's kind of like the styrofoam is kind of like complaint.
So one,
they do their inspection, but
the funds for the enforcement. I also think any rollout of this, we would want to, and this is what Legislator Parity was talking about. We would want to. Get a certain number of plastic bags from the county to give out as an the dual purpose of
the
also
reusable bags.
The reusables, an educational component. And so we'd want to get that to circulate to people as well, and that would have a cost associated. And so that's something we'd have to talk about.
About having a contest even to decorate.
Yeah,
a
contest for kids, contest for decorating. The other thing that the other outliers are. Which are in my notes from the first draft that we submitted, which I'll pull up my later draft, is the reporting component, which I think is important to somehow. Most legislation has some kind of reporting component where businesses that fall under this, whether depending on how wide we cast the net in terms of what our coverage is, report back their number of sales on the single-use bags. And then the rollout, because one of the biggest things that I've read about in terms of concern in communities that have passed it is the ability to utilize the existing stock, and also to be prepared to get the information out.
I would say we could give them a 6-month grace to prepare what I'd be complete, you know, once we, that would be written in, but, you know, I was thinking that to pass it and then get it rolling right away would probably be tough on these, especially with the backstop they have, and just getting their customers used to it. There's probably things, you know, as these people show up and now they don't have their bags, it's going to be, if they had a sign out there, mm-hmm. or especially smaller shops are going to be able to actually, you know, talk to these people and prepare them. That would probably be
a
better way
to make it. As
and for us to
nice
do too, for us,
you know,
to do the PSAs.
So people are.
But this is something we've been talking about for a while.
Yeah,
we, not me, but and I feel like looking at the makeup of the legislature this year, we're probably going to get to 12 votes a lot easier than there's a possibility to get to 12 and get this passed. Mm-hmm. I think going into the future, we got to come up, and whether we do a flow chart or whatever, let's just start, checking off these things. You know, once we decide whether we're going total ban or tax, that, you know, that then you're off
the
tax.
Fee.
But you're off and running to one side. And then there's these basic questions you just mentioned, a lot mm-hmm. of them. But I'd love to move on. And if we get to a point, let's get it up. Let's see if we can get it passed. But let's start, you know, going into, I mean, we're not voting on it today.
No,
but going into the next month's meeting, I think we ought to really get down to business, and I'd like to see it voted on by within 2 months. I mean,
yeah,
I don't
me
think
too.
There's why, no, you know, any reason why we can't just start checking, making our five-person decision on what we're going to go with on all those five or six main things, and then throw it up there. And
you
see
know what
it.
I'll do before the next meeting is
everything you got. What do you got, bud?
Yeah. I just want to throw this out there too for you. Is because we've done this in the past. If you want our support for this, I can run it past the board, and we've passed memorializing resolutions before.
Yeah,
to support you guys.
That'd be great.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Like in the compost.
Yeah, no, and your
styrofoam ban.
And
we did that.
Yeah,
and we did it for something else. I know we did.
And this is gonna. Yeah, this is something great. That is gonna be good for you. I would, mm-hmm. right.
I mean, there's. I can tell you, I don't like them in my Murph.
Yeah,
you know, mm-hmm. the trash, the garbage state. You know where the garbage is. It doesn't really matter unless they get blown out of the building. But in the Murph, they're paying the net.
Yep.
They see as much as a 70% reduction.
And it is hard, though, when you have, like, newspapers and stuff.
You know what? People tie up their recycling, and they throw it in, and then it comes on our belt, and we have to break it apart, and it's or it gets caught up in the equipment. And
but it's hard to keep your papers together unless you put it in something.
Yeah.
So
what about newspaper bags? Mm-hmm. Bag people when people get the newspapers delivered, the Times or the Record.
Yeah, they're
oftentimes
plastic bags.
They're in
it's still allowable. And what's still allowable in any legislation I've seen is not the point of sale bags. So if you're going and you're
so
getting
plastic bags on celery, or fine.
Yeah, you're getting like
plenty of plastic
and
bags.
Not just that. If you're getting 10 apples, you know,
right.
And you pull that,
yeah,
those
yeah.
plastic bags are still okay. Right. The biggest culprit is the point of checkout bag. And so, yeah, what I'll do is I'll cross-reference my latest draft with Dave's. When I spoke to Dave, he said, then put your draft in. I said, I don't really want to have competing drafts. I want to figure out what the right thing is. So I'll cross-reference. I'll talk to Dave.
You want to come in united with one thing
yeah.
and not cause confusion.
Well,
and then I'll get through
those
checkpoints.
You've spent a lot more time on this than Dave. I think he'd probably be willing, if you came up with something that you liked, he'd probably be willing to pull his.
Has anybody surveyed
I think your name should be on it one way or another anyway.
The local or business community or retail community as what their thoughts are on this? Because I know they passed in the state now, every retailer has to have a bag disposal box located in their store where you can bring the bag back to that store.
Well, above a certain size.
But we
right,
also
yeah.
need to like see where it's
yeah,
going.
Yeah, they actually,
that.
And they talk
yeah.
about that in the report. And they, what's interesting, so that was brought up by an opponent of the law saying, oh, it, you know, this exists. You know, there's already recycling of plastic bags happening. And I said, that's in, that is in DEP legislation. I was, DEC, I'm going to get them confused. DEC, it's in DEC legislation, and it's required for any store that's over a certain footprint. But the best I can tell, because at that time I called DEP, is they don't report to anybody. They're just required to recycle. And
well, they're required to have a collection.
They're required to have a collection. And they're required.
Where they take their bags and how effective they are of truly recycling them.
We're not involved in that.
No. And let me tell you this.
Well,
this
it's
report.
Probably 5%. I mean, of the bags that I don't return my plastic bags. In fact,
I do, but I
throw those into the recycling.
I don't want to just focus on that. On only that, but
right.
I want to has the retail community been surveyed to find out what their.
So that's good for them to have that anyways, because that stuff can continue to be brought back
in. Yeah, sure.
Tim,
if I buy garbage bags, those little garbage bags, because that's what I do with my single use bags, I use them for garbage.
That's what we do in my house, too, in the bathrooms. And
So if I'm replacing those with the garbage bags, are those heavier or something? Do they go through your machine better? Do regular garbage bags, like I use in my kitchen, my doll bags, do those jam up here?
They all do. We have to top the line and break
well,
it apart.
Well, because you're talking about the recycling?
I'm talking about the recycling.
Yeah. So it's like putting your newspaper or your letter.
So don't put your recycling into bags, which happens.
Loose.
Yeah.
That's the only
so,
way
but
we can
it's
sort
not,
because
the garbage, you're not put. All right.
If it's in the garbage, I don't care. It goes.
Because it still is going to be, people are still going to use their garbage bags. Because. Mm-hmm.
You know, our excavator comes down, picks it up with the claw, and puts it right in the truck, and it goes off to the landfill.
Well,
because I know some of my tenants are
definitely
taking the recyclables and putting them
whatever
in
makes sense as far. And then
and
if you wanted to,
so can I answer Brian's question just about whether or not? So we haven't formally ever surveyed the business community. We've had members of the business community come to us, many who were interested and open. The EMC, the county EMC, is supportive of a ban on plastic bags. And whatever we want to do,
right.
They're supportive. And so in the individual EMCs and individual communities have been aggressively, depending on the community, working with their business communities. And that's how the discussion really began out of a push from Marbletown and Marbletown's EMC. What we heard from the businesses that came to us was there were many businesses that wanted to do it, but felt that they would be at a disadvantage if they were doing it alone within their community, or if they were doing it, if their community were doing regulated to do it, and right across the board, you know, right across the town line, the next community wasn't.
Well, Keeson had that concern.
So there's been a real push for it to be something coming from the county. I think the more I've looked at it, that if it included the fee, which is the thing that's most controversial to the public, the business community could very easily be on board. Because as I said, if if you're charging for a paper bag very close to what it's costing you, and you can say, this is what the law says, I have to charge for this bag, then none of your customers are going to be upset with you, and you're not going to be suffering any great loss.
The reason I ask that question is because if this is going to be successful, mm-hmm. especially with the rollout, they're going to be a partner of ours.
Right.
And so I think it's worthwhile to somehow gauge their view on this matter.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, you have to look at, you have to get their opinion.
Okay. And then,
you're going to hear things that we haven't even thought about probably. Well, maybe you probably heard it, but yeah, no, you got to. You don't have to go with what they say. That's information you got to go get.
Because, like I said, they're going to be our partners, particularly if this at the beginning of this process, if it goes forward.
Yeah, and you know, there's great success stories the nation over, and even in New York. I mean, I just would love to still be ahead of the curve. I expect that in New York, we're gonna see some statewide legislation eventually. Unfortunately, I don't think it's gonna happen as quickly as the governor.
Is there a New York model for us? Have any other counties?
Yeah, Suffolk has done it.
Hastings on Hudson.
New Paltz has a total ban, but it's the village. Yeah, so it's I'm not discounting it, but it's not supermarket.
They don't have a fee for the paper.
Yeah.
But any upstate counties, Western?
You know, I have to look and see what Albany County. I know Albany County was discussing
it. The reason I bring that up because it would be interesting to do an analysis of what their rollout was like and what obstacles they encountered.
That's the first thing I do on anything is look to the other counties that have done something.
What's interesting in New Paltz is only the village has to do it.
Right.
But there's some stores that are outside the village
that are doing it anyway.
Mom and pops that are doing it now too. And the biggest problem that I've seen when I've actually been in the store that has a van like that, and when tourists are there, somebody was buying cupcakes and wanted a bag because they didn't want the kids to see the cupcakes. And they're putting the cupcakes in a box anyway, so they don't even have bags. So.
Yeah, well, I really believe 10, 15, 20 years, it'll just be something that's just automatic. You got your phone, you got your canvas. It's just the way it's going to be. And the sooner we act on these things, the sooner we get to that point.
Yeah.
It's inevitable. We're getting to that point. We might as well do it. I really feel it. And it's going to save some time and money at these transfer stations and everywhere else. I just can't see not doing it.
And also,
on some level,
what you talk about in terms of getting there, I think the sooner we change habits, we're changing it for the next generation. We'll change a habit now. You know, I was at a clothing store, a kid's clothing store in the mall, and this woman next to me was buying a hat, and she took out a cloth bag, which I never think of bringing in my reusable bags when I'm at a clothing store. And the checkout person commented on it, and she said, oh, I just moved here from California. We've been doing it for so long that, she said, I never leave the house without my bags. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, people who are in Europe.
Statewide?
It is statewide. And there are, there are whole countries. It's pretty embarrassing when you look at the list of countries.
Are parts of California just food, though?
Last year
I was at a Walmart in LA, and I was at Walmart, but they had the bags at a heavier mill, and mm-hmm. since I was traveling, they were 10 cents a piece, and I ended up buying 5 extras because I could still use them for when I travel for my laundry.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, so.
I'm very excited. I'm very excited that there finally is the possibility, because we have been talking about this theoretically and trying to drill it down. But you know, look, the polystyrene ban. We talk about this. Mary and
it's
I,
over 3 years,
the day we met in the elevator going up, we talked about polystyrene foam, and it took 3 years to get a bipartisan support to make it happen. And so this, I think you're going to experience it as something that's really fast, because finally we have the right.
Well, when you see the makeup of both sides, I just think.
Yeah, I think we will
we're
too.
We're going to get 5 or 6 out of this.
So let's be smart about it. I'm going
to match that.
I'll analyze the comparison, and I'll also list in very clear what our questions and concerns, what those checkpoints of this or this were, so that we can run through those issues in the next meeting.
Definitely. And then we may spend 45 minutes, a whole meeting on one of those things, but there's only five or six, I think, that are the big questions.
Probably,
and we just start hammering
questions.
Away those things, and we put it up. I mean,
okay.
That's how I look at it.
I'm good.
So do we have any more new business?
I feel like I brought up other things to my phone, but now I don't remember what they were.
Jonathan's got his letter.
Oh, right. So, yeah, that just to let everybody remember that, Jonathan has his letter out. There's a copy. He gave it just to me. So it was circulated by Jay. This is regarding the Public Service Commission.
I've had a lot of people tell me that this is conspiracy theorist stuff, but... It's choice.
Choice.
And I'd hate to find out later that there is something to it. But
So I'm just wanted to let everyone on this committee know, because it was this committee that moved the memorializing resolution years ago, just supporting the effort to have the choice. And we heard some crazy stories about, people who cut off their power and lived with candles for 2 years. remember? Yeah. It was really extreme. Really extreme.
For those people, they should be able to charge a little more. If it's going to charge them more to have that on, they should be able to pass a reasonable, whether it's 5 or 10 or 20, whatever, a year. But you should be able to have that
option. So the smart metering, the so-called smart meters, send out a pulse once every certain amount of time, and it registers at very, very high. And there are I personally have people in my district that I know that in their home they are completely landline. There's no wireless capacity in their home of anything. That's becoming harder and harder these days because I forget what the actual sickness is, but they experience a sensitivity to the wireless pulsing signals. So the power company's been switching to smart meters because it's easier to check the meter remotely.
Without telling people.
Yeah, without telling people. They just come and change it. And even though your meter might be fine and it's the old meter, they cut it off and take it out.
Because they were saying that they do a percentage where they come out and take your meter to make sure they're working right.
Mm-hmm.
And replace it. So that was happening too.
Right.
People didn't realize because once they did that, once they took it, they couldn't.
They wouldn't put it back.
They
wouldn't
replace
they could be
it with what they.
They said they don't make them anymore, but they brought us information showing where they can. They do make them. There was a lot, but I basically came down to where you just said, where I just felt, okay, it's about choice. If you want to opt out, you should be able to opt out until. The jury's in on everything. I don't know
it's above my knowledge.
And
for sure.
Manna Jo is our climate smart committee person, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they have a meeting coming up.
They just had it this week, Monday.
Is this more affected in the rural parts of the county? Because you hear like Saugerties had an issue with it, Woodstock. And
I'd say it's probably more demographic. Type areas are probably going to see New Paltz, Woodstock, Saugerties. People that are more environmentally conscious are going to be more concerned with that kind of a thing. So parts of City of Kingston, maybe.
Also might have to do with the meter reader doesn't have to
be. Well,
I know, I understand that part. Yeah. I'm just saying.
But also, I think
they're all over.
I haven't heard of any.
Or hear about it as much. Or tied into the kinds of places that are talking about this.
So, well, Nana's not here to do the climate smart.
She has a really aggressive agenda. They set some goals for the year, I know.
Okay.
And we're going to need to put somebody else on that committee.
Because Jonathan's
on. We need somebody from this committee and somebody from Public Works. And she, but they're trying to get all of the towns in the county to
sign on.
And they're working on it. She has a really good group of people that they're working with her and. I love doing the minutes for the meeting because I learned so much.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Good. Do you want me to make more of these?
I think if anyone else wants a copy.
I have that on my email. That's the one I have on my email.
Yeah.
I'll print that out myself.
Okay. like I say, I can print more.
I'm going to read it electronically.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I do want to, some of the other things, just to kind of put it out there for future meetings, I think that we should revisit some of our environmental initiatives. You know, we got the Green Fleet report at the end of last year, but we should look, you know, at least look at the Green Fleet
initiative.
Are we
buying those vehicles from local dealerships, or do we just go right onto that open bid
and take what it gets? The state has the part. You go through the vehicle marketplace now that what you have.
Yep.
The state's transitioned over to that. And we just bought, well, the city of Kingston just bought four from, and they're from the Nissan.
Yeah, I feel like we might
have
bought, or
leased. Do you have a local law that
someone
allows local dealerships within a certain amount of miles?
No, you can't do that. You can't do geographical preferences are illegal. You can't in procurement.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Oh, I have stuff on that. In New York, it's not. Oh, so
yes.
I just started looking into that, and I'm finding all these places, but I didn't take note whether it was New York.
Really,
oh wow,
you. It's favoritism.
You end up opening up the places that I've seen have done it have this in their Bible. Every year they have to take a look. But we just bought a $700 in the town of Saugerties, a $700 Bronco. For the building inspector of the town. Now, keep in mind, we have a
you
village.
You say $700?
$691 from a dealership in New Jersey, and that's what had me looking into what kind of local laws would allow us to go to Sawyer Motors or donate.
Well, that's below any bidding threshold at that dollar value. But ordinarily, like, what you can do, we occasionally, with the city, we've gone out for procurement for used vehicles. But you always put in the spec, new or used, because if someone's going to issue you, offer you a good price on a new one,
that's important how you plug it in.
So
I imagine
we would always procure it in that manner.
How we plug that
and,
in.
But typically now we buy generally the New York State Department of Environment has the aggregate purchasing. We've purchased electric vehicles off that, and we've also through the vehicle marketplace we've gotten others. And the key is to get the local people, to get local dealers, is getting them to sign up and participate. And when they sign up and participate,
and then plugging things in that
they can do well. Well, the great thing about the vehicle marketplace is that the agency can exactly put down what they want the vehicle. And for best as me as a procurement officer, is that all the after I can list all the aftermarket equipment that I want on that vehicle, and all the entire and that the. I get a price for that, and the entire thing is under the umbrella of a state contract purchase.
Right.
So I don't have to, if I want, we're buying a truck with a lift gate, and the lift gate's about $3,000 item. Now, our ordinary procurement guidelines would require that we get multiple quotes for that. We don't have to now because, well, we are, in a sense, we are getting multiple quotes because we went out for bid under this state contract, and it helps with particularly aftermarket items on a vehicle.
Oh, I'm going to pick your brain with some stuff.
I just used the marketplace to order a dump truck, and I just spec'd it right out.
Yeah.
And a dealership down near New York City ended up getting it. But it's the same thing. The state controller's office, I talked to them, and they said, no, you can't buy local. One of our board members wanted to buy local. And the state controller's office, they said,
wow.
It will be written
I just started looking into that, and I didn't even get it.
But otherwise, you're going to get written up.
Local preference laws I was looking into. And that's not, oh, wow, save me some time.
Is there any movement for us to be able to meet a little later or no?
There are no other meetings on Thursdays that we're meeting. I mean, there happened to be a meeting after us tonight.
Tonight, right.
But I actually did the calendar for the year for this committee, and all of your meetings are on good nights. Like, there's some Monday meetings that have to be moved. There's a meeting on the 4th of July that has to be moved, things like that. But there's nothing after you
for us
right now. Now,
I would ask that we move our meeting a little later then, because it's just a little challenge for me. I know that, speaking for Man, I know it's a challenge for her, and I know it's a little challenging for you. So if we could move it to 6, that would be great.
I'll make anything work.
It's a long meeting.
6 works for me. The only thing I'm letting you know now, April 5th, I'm going to be traveling.
Okay.
So I won't be. I'll be missing that meeting. So I'm kind of glad we pushed
that we made it to May. Well, we would have been
anyway
if we knew
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we would have been here anyway.
Yeah. One more thing I'd love to start dealing with in a quick way, and I've talked to you about it, but just going paperless as we have all these big conversations about. We have we got that pulling up to the county building every other day or so. I mean, it's just the amount of that, and it'd probably end up saving money when you start talking about ink or toner and mm-hmm. paper.
Well, what's it going to take? Like this, like I think I didn't print one out for everybody. I didn't.
I think the first thing is, how much is it going to cost to go paperless? Mm-hmm. So we need a report. Done. We just need to figure out a ballpark on what kind of software, what kind of actual hardware.
23 basic tablets. They don't have to be.
I think they're yeah. Steve did. I think they're already looking at that.
Yeah, they don't.
That's
have
what
to
I keep hearing. But I first started asking this a couple of months ago. Let's just do it. We're talking about $20,000-$30,000. I mean, let's just do it.
I don't think it'll be that much. I think it'll be less.
You want to make sure there's custody procedures and all that.
The stuff that we'll have to hammer out once we get past how much it's going to be. Then we can start talking. We can even do, if we have to talk about it. If you're going to take it home, there has to be an insurance policy, and that's something you're going to have to pay for. Never take it home. Yeah,
you're going to take it home, but I don't even know that you're going
to obtain the records.
Yeah.
You have to be able to read them.
But I just think it's taken way too. I mean, we should be paperless. We should have.
I'll strive to tablets. Be as paperless. As
well, yeah, but we should have tablets, and we shouldn't have stacks of paper on big meeting nights. Most of this stuff here, we should be looking at a tablet. It's just, look, we're the environmental committee, and look what we're doing. Look at the picture I just showed you. Let's just do it. I mean, I don't feel like we're talking about anything that's that expensive or that involved, and I keep getting told that's coming now. That's coming, and that's government. It's coming down the line. Let's just do it. I mean, it's not much money. It makes perfect sense. It's not that complicated. Let's bring it up, hammer it out.
Where do we get the prices that are on state bid currently?
I think they go through. First of all, IT has to agree that there are things that they can support, and then.
I don't think IT has to agree on anything, because everything that we are given exists in a digital format now these days. And there's nothing that I've ever in the last 5 years shown up and gotten in a folder that wasn't in a digital.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So everything could be just it could all be happening through this office. It's just everything would be emailed in a packet, and you'd start to change habits where people would actually bring a dedicated tablet that had everything in it.
Less paper on his line, right?
Well, paper, I'm still making a little money.
Oh, you're still making
I've been out of the loop for what's happening with all that. Jay and Vicky have been dealing with it.
So maybe we could get a report from Jay and Vicky for the next meeting.
Ask them if they can have it for the next meeting. And I don't care if it's basic, or pretty generalized,
to get us going. Because if we have to move a policy or a resolution for funding, then we do that. So what I was saying just quickly about the fleet is I think we should look at, for example, the fleet and some of the green building policies that we have in place, and see if they need to be updated, if goals should be changed or increased or whatever. We need to just look at what's out there. And I know Mana said that, I believe, was it Jay that did a list of all the environmental initiatives that were out there for Climate Smart, maybe? I think she might have. So maybe we could get that circulated to the whole committee, and we could start just ticking off those things as well.
Now, if we come across, say we were told, one more time, did your name?
Oh, Tim.
Tim.
Yeah.
If Tim tells us, look, I could use a study as far as, which we don't think he does on that, but as far as this is an auditing committee question, but if we come across something in the environmental committee where we go, man, a $30,000 study could really get us going on this or help us out, can we go to the auditing committee and ask for that there? Oh, let's keep that in mind, too. Mm-hmm.
The audit committee hasn't...
$100-some-odd thousand studies, so I have a list.
I have one that I've been trying to get moving, but we should be utilizing that money for sure, because it'll serve us. Rather than sitting there.
Hey, look, government government waste, it's all about internal auditing, whether it's and outside auditing. I think you'd agree, working over it. I mean, you gotta look inward as far as...
Well, you always have to have outside auditing.
Yeah.
And as we go paperless, too, one other thing you might want to think about is how we're going to distribute the information to the public. Because when we print up the... one of the things that is very wasteful is, like, we'll print up packets and... And everybody in Ways and Means gets a copy, and then there's one on every desk, so that legislator that's in Ways and Means has already gotten two. Then we have some down caucus, so some people walk away with three, and then they leave them all behind at the end of the night. And then the public is looking for them, so we print it more for the public to have. So that's why we end up printing so many sometimes, and how we're going to get this information to the public who may not.
Well, we'd probably still be printing some things out at times. And what would be great is to have so little needed. Maybe we could even end up doing it here.
Yeah.
I mean, as we needed
we
it.
We used to do it here, too, right?
It'd be tough now, though, with the amount of stuff you guys are printing out. And I mean, when does that... And that's officially shut down now? And where are we... Who's doing the printing now?
In the basement, they're purchasing is doing the printing.
Okay.
They kept a printer down there.
All right.
We'll see how it works.
All right, but that'd be great if they could get us something by next month.
We had a really small packet for January, so it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
What, before it was being sent, before it was
Central Services?
Central Services.
And they had people that just printed stuff.
And now it's all sourced, outsourced? Do we know what the cost differential is on that? Why?
I have no idea.
Because that happened fairly recently, right?
Yeah. We didn't know it was happening until a small team was doing nothing but printing stuff out all day long.
I mean, we have to have a conversation, not just here, but in a lot of places.
The people who...
somehow using less...
Who were doing the printing were the ones who told us that they were... Because they've been doing it for 20 years.
But we're not printing less. We're just paying someone else to print instead of internal.
The only stuff is, because we can't... Because of laws and rules, being the night before session, things, we can't print out that packet till the next day.
Right.
So we were taking that packet. We were rushing in here in the morning at 9 o'clock, getting it ready to go, sending it over to Central Services, and they were getting back to us by 2 o'clock, 2 or 3 o'clock. Now we're going to just be taking it down to the basement. And somebody is going to be printing it down there. Hopefully, they have 5 or 6 printers. If one went down, something else.
I would be very curious about the cost savings with that move. I'd like to know. Is there someone asking? Is it comfortable?
Was the cost benefit analysis done prior to?
We didn't. There may have been, but we weren't notified of it.
That's operational.
Right.
Yeah.
So, as far as I know. So, do we have a motion to adjourn?
Sure.
A second. Mm-hmm. A second.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much.
So May 3rd,
keep working on
May 3rd,
and if there's anything you come up with as far as numbers for what it would cost if we ever have that, start to have that discussion about going back to two stream, and then anything with the plastic bags that
does
you
anybody
can
want
offer.
To take
if it's going to be an expansion, we're going to hire an engineering firm. Okay.
It would be,
And they're going to have to, it's going to cost those guys to find the board of directors if they work on that path.
I wouldn't mind just knowing or having a feel.